Hey, it's Jen. Just a quick heads up before we start the show. The news is rapidly developing, and things may have changed by the time you hear this episode. For the very latest news, tune into your public radio station and follow updates at npr.org. This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. He's the first president ever to be impeached twice and the first to face impeachment proceedings after leaving office. Senators will debate whether the Senate trial of former President Donald Trump is constitutional and if it should be held at all.
A president cannot simply resign to avoid accountability for an impeachable offense, nor can they escape judgment by waiting until their final few weeks in office to betray our country. The impeachment powers assigned to the Congress by the Constitution cannot be defeated by a president who decides to run away or trashes our democracy on the way out the door.
Besides the fact that this process is completely unconstitutional and that this is a very, very dangerous road to take with respect to the First Amendment, putting at risk any passionate political speaker, which is against everything we believe in this country.
That was Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, followed by Trump defense lawyer David Schoen. What should we expect from the Senate trial this time around? And what does this all mean for how we hold a president accountable? Joining us to talk about it is Rachel Bade. She's the co-author of Politico Playbook, and she's currently writing a book on the impeachment of Donald Trump. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
And on the line from Dallas is Jeffrey Engel. He's the director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University. He's also co-author of the book, Impeachment and American History. Jeff, welcome back to 1A.
Hi, it's good to talk to you again.
So, Rachel, we finally got details about how the trial will go. What did we learn?
Yeah, so we're going to be kicking off here around noon today, just a little after. And basically under the rules that Senate leaders unveiled, to start this trial, they're going to be debating for 4 hours today the main thrust of Trump's defense, which is, you know, whether you can actually impeach a former president. Is it constitutional to do so? As you sort of laid out in your opening, Trump's defense team and actually a bunch of Senate Republicans have sort of rallied around this idea, this argument that the Constitution actually doesn't allow for an impeachment of somebody who's already left office. But since then, in the recent days, we've seen a lot of pushback, both from lawyers, constitutional experts, and even some conservative lawyers who typically align themselves with Senate Republicans and seem to disagree. So I think, you know, today it's going to be an early test vote about whether any Republicans might change their mind on this issue. We do not, just to be clear, expect that managers will be able to convince these 17 Senate Republicans that would be needed to actually convict Trump. But they're certainly going to try to pick off as many as they can to side with Democrats. And then from today, we're basically going to see them move very briskly. This could be done in less than a week. There'll be 16 hours of presentations by the House managers, both on Wednesday and Thursday. Then the Trump defense team will go Friday, Saturday. We could see some question and answers, basically where senators will get time to, volley these questions at either managers or the defense team on Sunday. And right now we're hearing from some aides in the Senate that this could all be done by President's Day, which is Monday. And the bottom line here is that this would be the fastest impeachment trial in history. They have ranged from 21 days to 83 days in past impeachment trials. We're looking at possibly 6 days here. And I think the big wild card that people are watching, and I have been watching, is do the managers decide to call witnesses? Because if they do make that decision at the end, this could very much elongate the trial for several weeks to come. And we don't know where it will go if they end up moving in that direction.
Well, Jeff, as Rachel said, the trial is starting with this debate over the constitutionality of the trial itself. What does the Constitution have to say about impeachment?
You know, the Constitution is actually remarkably clear on this point. And, almost every single constitutional scholar or historian or lawyer that you would talk to will tell you that this is constitutional. So the argument that the a president cannot be impeached after leaving office is really a political one. What the Constitution essentially says is that a president can be impeached by the House of Representatives and then goes to a trial in the Senate and requires, of course, as we just heard, 2/3 majority in order to convict. And the interesting thing that the Constitution says is there's really only two penalties that the Constitution allows the Senate to impose. The first is removal from office, and the second is a second vote after a conviction, which would allow the Senate to say you may not hold office ever again. So in essence, the argument of those who say it's not constitutional is that why bother if this president has already been removed from office? Those who say it is constitutional, which again is 99% of the people who know anything about this, will tell you that it's because there's actually two elements to punishment that could be imposed by the Congress, and that, of course, would require a trial for the second one.
Now, Rachel, there was a vote a couple of weeks ago on whether the trial should be held, and five GOP senators said it should. And that's being looked at as a bit of a bellwether for what's to come, right?
Yeah, and that's why we've sort of been tampering expectations about whether Trump would really be convicted. I think it's been pretty clear, and, you know, despite all, you know, these constitutional experts saying that a president can be impeached, it's clear that Senate Republicans have been looking for a way out. You know, right after January 6th happened and the mob stormed the Capitol, there were a lot of Republicans who were saying, okay, this is it. We're done with President Trump. But the reality is, over the past few days, past few weeks, the base has very much stayed with the president. And I think that a lot of Republicans are looking at these poll numbers and hearing their constituents and saying, I can't vote for this. And so we were hearing from Republicans privately just a couple of weeks ago that they knew they couldn't defend Trump on the merits on this, right? They knew that would be difficult. They were there when the Capitol was stormed, and a lot of them believe he does bear responsibility. But they were looking for some sort of process out. And this is where this argument started to percolate. There was a call with McConnell and Senate Republicans just a couple of days ago, where they were basically pressing McConnell to see if they could go to the Supreme Court to get the whole thing thrown out. And the leader was telling them, you know, we don't have the ability to do that. But this really underscores Senate Republicans being in this political bind where they don't want to vote to convict Trump because of the base, but they also know they can't defend him on the merits. Well, and as you just mentioned, that vote that happened a few days ago, it was a telltale sign. Rand Paul, a conservative from Kentucky, forced this vote, saying basically this argument that Trump cannot be impeached because he's already left the White House. And as you mentioned, 45 Senate Republicans voted with him. And that just indicates to us that they're not going to get the 17 Senate Republicans needed to convict Trump. Will they get more than the five? We'll see.
Well, aside from whether the trial itself is constitutional, a lot of the debate is going to hinge on what happened on January 6th.
We have come to demand that Congress do the right thing and only count the electors who have been lawfully slated. I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Today we will see whether Republicans stand strong for integrity of our elections, but whether or not they stand strong for our country.
That was part of the speech former President Trump gave at a rally outside the White House on January 6th. Before his speech was even finished, his supporters had begun to gather on the steps of the U.S. Capitol building. Jeffrey, why are Democrats starting with this particular speech?
I think it's because they have evidence that we all just heard and that you could see on the TV. I mean, one of the things that we take from looking at the history of impeachments is that if you look at Richard Nixon's case, and of course, he resigned before he would have been surely impeached, so I include it in the list. The thing that really did Nixon in was the ability for the American people to hear with their own ears what it was the president had done. Once the office tapes were released into the public, basically his Nixon support eroded overnight. So in essence, one thing that Democrats, I think, had learned from the first impeachment trial is something that the Nixon case reinforces, that the American public really needs to hear it themselves and see it themselves, that discussions, secondhand accounts, testimonies, affidavits, those may be good for a regular court, but this is a court that is political, therefore in a court support of the public opinion matters. So I think Democrats are wise to start with something that every American can get their eyes around.
But Trump's legal team has also talked about a First Amendment defense. What's that argument?
Yeah, again, this is one of those wonderful moments of legal sophistry, I guess, similar to the argument that it's not constitutional. They are arguing that the president is allowed to say whatever he wants politically, that that's guaranteed by the Constitution and the First Amendment. Now, of course, this is incorrect, and the vast majority of legal scholars would tell you this is incorrect, because in essence, the First Amendment guarantees you the right to free speech when you are a citizen from the government. But the truth of the matter is, impeachment is not about anything that is other than a political act. That is to say, you don't have to actually commit an actual crime on the books in order to be impeached. The Constitution demands that you are guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors, and a high crime is someone who does something detrimental to the interest of the nation. So in essence, it doesn't matter if President Trump had a First Amendment right as a citizen. What matters is how senators view what he said as president. That is to say, do you think he was acting presidential, and do you think he was acting in a manner consistent with his pledge to defend the Constitution? And that's really not a First Amendment issue. But again, if I was Trump's lawyer, I'd probably be arguing the same thing that he is.
We'll be back with more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
How do we reinvent ourselves? And what's the secret to living longer? I'm Anoush Zomorodi. Each week on NPR's TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey with TED speakers to seek a deeper understanding of the world and to figure out new ways to think and create. Listen now.
We're discussing former President Trump's second impeachment trial. We asked you if you think the former president should be impeached, and here's what some of you left in our inbox.
My name is Tom. I'm from Central New York. I am an independent. I tend to vote both directions, depending on the candidate. I feel that the former president has been treasonous to the democratic process of the United States. I think he's made a mockery of everything that it stands for. And I think he needs to be treated as such. I don't think that will happen. I think they'll go through the motions, and really it will all just be a moot point.
Carol from Jacksonville. I think that the impeachment of Trump is craziness. He is no longer president of the United States. If he committed a crime, there are plenty of federal courts that could try him. I think the Democrats who say they want unity are not. They're being divisive and hateful. And I would like to see both parties get along and stop the foolishness.
Tom and Carol, thank you for those messages. Rachel, I just want to be very clear. The former president was impeached while he was in office by the House, but the actual trial itself in the Senate is happening after he's out of office. Does that affect proceedings at all?
Well, it's not going to affect proceedings per se. What it's going to potentially affect is, again, the result. I mean, as we have seen, the Senate Republicans very much are rallying around this notion that this is a moot point. And while they won't defend the president on the merits, the former president on the merits, they very much seem to be sort of latching onto this argument that we're going to be hearing more about today from Trump's team, that he cannot be impeached at this point.
Well, Kay Sharpies has two questions I want to ask you, Rachel. He tweeted, is Trump going to show up? How would his presence or lack thereof affect the proceedings? And is there any news of another potential uprising from his supporters that we should worry about? So first, do we know of any planned rallies or protests related to the impeachment?
So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some protests here and there around the country. Nothing on the scale that we saw on January 6th when the president at the time, President Trump, actually called and summoned his supporters to Washington to protest. I think it's a good question because, you know, the Homeland Security Department has sort of warned that while January 6th is over, the danger sort of persists and that this threat out there is continuing. And it's just another reminder that while this trial is taking place, there very much are emotions that are still running raw on Capitol Hill, both lawmakers, reporters who sort of lived through the storming of the Capitol on the 6th. And so I think that that's going to add a more emotional sort of flavor to what we're going to be hearing and how people are going to be reacting up on the Hill.
Second question, House Democrats asked Trump to testify last week and he declined. Could he still be called to participate?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It looks like no. Clearly, the impeachment managers were trying to get him to come up. And there was some reporting the first time Trump was impeached that he actually did want to show up on Capitol Hill, but his lawyers kept him from doing so. It looks like the same thing is happening this time. You know, his lawyers, his defense team have said he's not going to participate. There's also a group of bipartisan lawmakers who have said something similar on Capitol Hill. We were hearing from Democrats in the Senate who said they don't want Trump testifying. They don't want to hear from him either. So it looks like that's very unlikely. But again, we'll see. You can never predict Trump.
We got this email from Catherine who says, I thought it was the court's job to determine constitutionality. Is that true? If so, how is it that these senators, many of whom are attorneys, get to decide if this is constitutional? Jeff?
Well, I presume the person who wrote in is referring to the courts, the Supreme Court and judicial courts. This is really important that the Constitution actually gives no role whatsoever to the judiciary, to the third branch of government, with the exception of the Chief Justice of the United States is supposed to preside over the trial. Although actually the Chief Justice has no real power in this trial because the Senate, and again, this is an unusual case, the Senate is not a jury listening to the evidence. The Senate is technically its own court. So the Senate can make its own rulings. And in fact, the Senate could overrule the presiding judge. The Senate basically gets to decide what the rules are, what happens when, and also what the standards of evidence and what the standard of guilt should be. This is a political trial.
Right. It's a political trial. And Adam tweeted, while not a criminal trial, do Democrats need to make the case as to incitement of violence as if it were beyond a reasonable doubt? Is this not an unreasonable ask when trying someone for high crimes and misdemeanors? What is the standard here?
Well, the standard, if this was a regular trial, would be very, very difficult to reach, especially since the president said contradictory things in his message to his followers on January 6th. He said, be peaceful, and then he said, go fight. So were this a criminal trial, I don't think that there's really any likelihood that we would get a conviction. But we don't need to have beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no standard that's outlined in the Constitution for what a high crime is. It's genuinely a you-know-it-when-you-see-it type of activity. And the founders were very, very clear that they understood a high crime to be when someone placed their own interest above the interest of the state or before the interest of the state, when they thought that they were more important than the people that they were there to protect and represent. That's all the Senate needs to weigh at this point, is whether or not they think the president did something which was against the best interest of the American people. And frankly, that's it.
Well, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina says he doesn't believe impeachment is the right course of action. Here he is on CBS's Face the Nation, speaking with Margaret Brennan.
It's not a question of how the trial ends. It's a question of when it ends. Republicans are going to view this as an unconstitutional exercise. And the only question is, will they call witnesses? How long does the trial take? But the outcome is really not in doubt. That doesn't mean what happened on January the 6th was okay. It means this impeachment, in the eyes of most Republicans, is an unconstitutional exercise.
Right. We also got this tweet from Ryan who says, I want to hear from people who attended the rally but didn't march down to the Capitol. What were they experiencing and why did they decide it was best to just go back to their hotel? Rachel, what is this debate over witnesses? And if the Senate calls them, who might we hear from?
Yeah, so there's been sort of this quiet back and forth going on, actually in the Democratic Party on the Hill about witnesses. The impeachment managers, for a long time as they were sort of preparing this case, sort of envisioned a trial where they would call in people that they thought could change minds. We're talking about Capitol Police officers who were trying to defend the Capitol and saw one of their own actually die that day. Georgia officials who were pressured by President Trump himself to overturn the results of the election, to say their state went for Trump instead of Biden, when it actually went for Biden. Former White House officials who were with President Trump on January 6th and could testify to how he was acting. Was he delighted? What was he doing? Was he refusing to send additional support to protect people. But the problem is there's very much a sense right now amongst both the Biden administration and senior Democrats on Capitol Hill that they want this over with. They want to move on and get Biden's agenda passed. And so there has sort of been this back and forth going on where you have some Democrats who want to lay out a full case beyond just looking at the videos and putting together, you know, they're going to be presenting this reel that very much is going to take people through the timeline of January 6th and how we got to the storming of the Capitol. But do they go beyond that? And I think right now there's a lot of sort of pressure to move on, not just on the part of Republicans, but also on the part of, again, senior Democrats who want to get on to Biden's agenda and sort of see this as a distraction. But this sort of raises a question that I think is a good one. I mean, beyond trying to get enough Senate Republicans to convict, how much do the managers have a responsibility to also persuade the public, right? If you look at polling right now, you will see that Republicans are very much behind President Trump. And it's interesting, you know, Jeff, you were talking about the Nixon example, and Nixon was really popular with his base. It took a lot of time for impeachment investigators to build a case, persuade these supporters of Nixon against him, and ultimately, you know, change the tide. And I guess, you know, the managers have a moment. They have a moment here where they could try to not just relitigate what happened on January 6th, but maybe even go further. Tell us, what did Trump know before this? And what did he know during it? And how was he acting? Are they going to do that? It looks like they're not. But we won't actually know the answer of that until the end of the week. And if they sort of use this as an opportunity to bring in witnesses and hear more.
We also got this message from James on Facebook who says, if a president can't be impeached once he leaves office, what's to stop future bad actors from committing crimes during the lame duck session? And I would love to hear from you first, Rachel, about how much this question is playing into the calculus around impeachment.
This is going to be the counter that we're going to hear from managers throughout the day today. And it's this notion of, you know, if somebody just resigns from office and you can't impeach them, does it sort of preclude them from facing accountability, from ensuring that, you know, they don't do this again? And I mean, that's going to be the thrust of, again, what you hear the managers say. If you look at the example of, you know, Richard Nixon, who resigned before he was impeached, you know, is that the sort of precedent that they're going to set here if they say a president cannot be impeached after he leaves office that allows somebody in power to do things that are unethical, to potentially break the law, be shielded from it, and then just resign when they're seeing some sort of consequence coming down the pipeline? That seems to be, to some people, a scary sort of thing. And so that will be the counter argument we will 100% hear from these managers who are presenting today.
We're discussing Trump's second impeachment trial. We'll hear more from you and our guests in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
My name is Peter Sagal, and I'm here to interrupt your very serious NPR podcast to tell you about another NPR podcast, mainly mine, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Chances are that right now you're enjoying an earnest, serious treatment of some serious topic in the news or perhaps history or science. That's great, really. Well, that's not what we do, because people cannot live on Sirius alone. Listen now to the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me podcast from NPR.
Back to impeachment in a moment, but first, tributes from around the world are being paid to Mary Wilson, a founding member of the Supremes. She died at the age of 76. The founder of Motown Records, Berry Gordy, called her a trailblazer who opened the doors for many singers who followed. And throughout her career, she stressed how important it was for people like her to write their own history. Here's Mary Wilson speaking to the BBC in 2014.
My teacher told me when I was 17 years old, still at Motown, and a lot of the fans out there will know we were still the Primettes back in those days. We were four girls. And my teacher told me, he says, Miss Wilson, if you think you're going to go down to Motown Records and keep on recording and tour and all this stuff, he says, you better pass my class and graduate from high school. And so I wrote this paper, and the paper, he gave me an A on it. And he says, Miss Wilson, I think you should become a writer and forget about singing in that little group. And so I started keeping a diary from that day on.
Now let's turn back to the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. We asked you what you thought of the power of the presidency, and here's what Kim in Fort Lauderdale told us.
I have never understood why anybody in the House, Senate, Congress, or presidency have been able to have the power that they have and the inability to be removed when they're not doing their job properly. I don't believe any of these positions should be lifelong. I believe they should be elected and rotated more, and powers should be revoked when they're not being used properly, period. I just don't understand why they're not. I guess the Constitution doesn't allow us to move forward in our modern day, and maybe it's time to make those changes.
Kim, thanks for sharing that with us. Jeff, can you give us a bit of a historical perspective? How does this impeachment trial fit in with others we've seen in the past?
Boy, I'm glad you asked that. I was just thinking, how am I going to get into the history of this? there's basically, we've only had five examples in history of an actual impeachment trial, if you include Richard Nixon, which I do. We're starting to get enough to draw some conclusions. And I think the conclusion I draw is that there's basically two different types of impeachments. There's impeachments for personal conduct, where a president does something reprehensible, think Bill Clinton, and frankly, think Donald Trump in the first impeachment trial. And then there's impeachments where there's really a question, as your last caller just suggested, where there's really a question of the constitutional balance of power, that where power is going to reside in Washington, of a president trying to accumulate too much power within the executive. And that was certainly the case, I would argue, for Andrew Johnson in 1868, that the Congress wanted to rip back power that the presidency had tried to assume. And frankly, this is a moment where Congress has the opportunity to reassert itself as a co-equal branch of government. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone that thinks at this point that the actual balance of power in Washington between the three branches is in fact balanced at this point. Clearly, the executive has been ascendant for, frankly, the entire 20th century and onward. But one thing to remember is that after Andrew Johnson's trial in 1868, we saw a period of, for the next generation, where Congress was able to become more ascendant, where Congress was able to take back more power from the president. So if you're a person who believes that the constitutional balance of power is important, this is a moment that Congress could stand up for its own institution if it so chose, which is what the founders would have desired.
We got this question from Kelly in Michigan, who asks, I would like to know why Donald Trump is not being tried in a criminal court for inciting a riot, especially now that he is a private citizen. And Bill tweeted, are there ways to accomplish the same goals of this impeachment through federal court action? Jeff?
There are. I mean, the Constitution is very clear that the president could be tried for any crimes that he commit, any actual crimes on the books that he commits while he's in office. And that is, in essence, a more dangerous question, it seems to me, because the penalty for throwing a former president or convicting a former president could be jail time. And in some cases, honestly, if it's treason, it could be execution, as outlined in the Constitution, at least originally. And that's a very dangerous precedent. precedent that we'd want, that I'd be careful to go over about sort of going in and evaluating the actions of previous presidents in order to throw them in jail. That's something that, frankly, our standard of democracy has not done. That's something we see in countries with less stable democracies around the world. I can't stress enough that the point of this impeachment trial is to make a statement. Yes, it would be to remove a president from office. That's not relevant here. But B, it's to make the statement that what the president did was wrong. Now, again, that I think is equally important going forward as what happens to President Trump specifically in a criminal case going forward as well.
Would him being acquitted by the Senate affect a regular criminal trial?
It certainly would. It certainly would in the sense that it would make it extraordinarily difficult for any prosecutor to want to bring the case. I mean, I think it's extraordinarily difficult, even as it is, to try to even think, even conceive of putting a former president on trial for actions that they committed while in the White House. Now, again, I have to stress, I'm talking about actions in the White House. So the other ongoing litigation that is about against Trump for perhaps financial mismanagement or malfeasance before he entered the White House, that's a different question. And the Supreme Court has recently punted on the entire question of whether President Trump violated the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution, that is to say, whether he violated the clause that says you may not use your office for profit, basically said, we don't need to address this anymore because he's not president anymore. So any case that we have going forward of a prosecutor trying to essentially put the president on trial for what he did in office would be that almost unprecedented in American history. And I think if Trump were acquitted in his Senate trial, as we all expect, that really is going to close the door on whether or not he's going to be prosecuted for things he did while president.
Well, we got this question from Mary about the benefits a president gets when he leaves office and how an impeachment affects them.
My name is Mary, and I'm calling from Lewis, Delaware. And my question regarding the impeachment is, should he be impeached for the second time, will he still get presidential privileges post his term? For instance, a presidential funeral. That will just make me so angry if my tax dollars are going to pay for his funeral.
So, Rachel, if the former president is convicted, what happens?
So if he is convicted, lawmakers can basically move to sort of take away benefits that he might have otherwise, including there's this question about whether they could bar him from running for office again. There's a debate right now about whether they could do this even if he is acquitted by invoking the 14th Amendment and basically passing a resolution saying that Trump incited an insurrection and therefore he cannot run for office. This would be something they could pass on a party line vote. But yes, if he's convicted, I mean, they could potentially try to pass a whole bunch of things in terms of barring him from office, keeping him from having protection. But the question is sort of, will they do that? Would Democrats try to do that even if he is acquitted? I want to go back to something, though, that Jeff was talking about, this notion of, is this the moment that Congress sort of reasserts itself in terms of oversight? As somebody who has sort of covered the Democrats trying to check Trump for 2 years now, you know, I kind of look at this in a little more pessimistic lens. Mm-hmm. I have watched and reported out for 2 years as Democrats have really tried to hold Trump accountable. And each time he seems to sort of slip through the cracks, whether it's ignoring subpoenas for their investigations, blocking people from testifying. And there was at one point talk about a year ago, right after Trump was impeached for the first time, about whether Democrats want to tackle these sort of post-Watergate reforms. Like after Nixon left office, there was a bunch of changes that were made to sort of bolster congressional oversight. I think right now what we're seeing is that congressional oversight has really is really struggling right now. And there is really a question of sort of the checks and balances and do they work? Even if, you know, they get, say, 10 Senate Republicans to vote to convict Trump, what does this say about congressional oversight? I think Trump has very much set a precedent for a future president who wants to ignore congressional oversight and get away with it. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you hear more talk about some sort of changes to one example that I've heard come up a couple of times would be to require the federal courts to sort of litigate battles between the Congress and the White House about documents and witness testimony in a quicker manner. One of the problems that investigators on the Hill have run into when trying to investigate Trump is that they can't get the documents they need. They can't get the witnesses they need to sort of build the case against him, to convince the public that what he did was wrong. And so I think that's a conversation that I think will continue. We haven't heard a lot about it right now because everybody's focused on this impeachment. But congressional oversight very much has taken a hit in this, you know, under Trump. And so it is going to be interesting to watch and see, do they try to reassert it, not just with this impeachment, but it's going to need more building up in the future. And what do they do about it?
You know, I can imagine people listening to our conversation and thinking about the relationship former President Barack Obama had with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and the way so much of his agenda was blocked. So when we talk about this issue of the balance of power, can you give us a broader historical perspective there?
I think actually, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, we do a real disservice to our students in civics classes, which means ultimately everybody in the country, by referring to the Constitution as set up as a balance of power. I think we should understand it more as a struggle of power, mm-hmm. that the founders genuinely believed that it was inherent in human nature that any person and any institution would want to accumulate power. And the way that you check one group of people or one individual from assuming too much power is to set them against each other. You know, essentially throw everybody who wants power in the government into a steel cage match. And as long as you're struggling against each other, nobody will be dominant. And I have to agree with Rachel. I think the likelihood of major reform going forward that allows Congress to take back more power from the imperial executive that we've seen grown up throughout the 20th and 21st century is very low, but I also think this is a key moment if Congress wants to ever stand up again and say we are a co-equal branch of government. This is a moment that they have not just an opportunity, but an obligation to do so.
That was Rachel Bade. She's the co-author of Politico Playbook, and she's currently writing a book on the impeachment of Donald Trump. It's expected to be released next winter. Also with us, Jeffrey Engel, the director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University. He's also co-author of the book Impeachment and American History. Rachel, Jeffrey, thanks for your time. Today's producer was Amanda Williams. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.